The Healthy Alabama podcast is sponsored by Enroll Alabama, a program that enrolls Alabamians in the health insurance marketplace. Navigators provide free local in-person support to all applicants. Enroll Alabama, 256-432-7494, 256-432-7494.
Welcome to another edition of the Healthy Alabama podcast, sponsored by Enroll Alabama. I'm David Person. And, of course, it's produced in partnership with our friends at WJOU-FM, Oakwood University Radio, Praise 90.1 FM here in Huntsville. And we are actually in the studios of WJOU today, and I'm talking with, by phone, someone who has been so special in my life, Rajam Roos, massage therapist extraordinaire. Welcome to the Healthy Alabama podcast.
Thank you so much, David, and that's really kind of you to say.
The reason I wanted you on today was not just to talk about massage therapy, but to talk about pain management, which is, I guess, the latest evolution of you and your business in the healing arts. So I want to start, though, Rajam, by just first kind of giving people a brief sense of who you are. You spent your early years... when I say early years, I'm saying, I guess this was late teens, early 20s. You call it vagabonding. You were vagabonding, across not just the United States, but even South America, right?
Yes, hitchhiking and camping out, living out in the woods. And I basically supported myself by crocheting hats and bags and selling them on the sidewalk.
You know, that is such a, I mean, you know, even hearing that again, I just think, wow, I don't think I know I wouldn't have had the courage to just strike out on my own in my late teens or early 20s to hitchhike across, you know, not just one not just one nation, but actually, you know, two continents. Why did you decide to do that? And how long did you do it?
Well, I've been wanting to travel since I was a kid. And I dropped out of college after about a year because I just didn't do well. Even though I enjoy learning, I didn't do well in the traditional learning environment. And so I was working at a warehouse, and I looked around one day, and I kind of got freaked out because I thought, oh, my gosh, this is going to be the rest of my life. And then I met somebody who traveled that way, and so, you know, that's how that got started. But I think those years, the 4 years I spent doing that, that's what helped gave me the strength to do what I'm doing now and the courage to do what I'm doing now.
So you mean you think you got the strength to be a well-established entrepreneur in the area of pain management from hitchhiking across two continents?
Yes, because I was very shy back then. I was very shy. I was very insecure. And I was very, I didn't have much of an understanding of the world and of people. I didn't like people at the time because all I knew about the world was from what I saw on the news. And then when I went out to the traveling, all of a sudden I meet all these people and most people generally just want to do the right thing. And so it really changed my perspective about people. I learned a lot about myself. So, yeah, I think that was really helpful. Naive, that was the word I was trying to think of.
Okay. Well, I just think that's an incredible story, even today. I just think that's incredible. So my guest for the Healthy Alabama podcast today is Rajam Roos. She is a dear friend, and I say that because we bonded over several years of Rajam being my massage therapist when she was based here in Alabama. She's now based in San Diego, California. So, Rajam, how did you get into massage therapy? Let's start there.
Well, when I was traveling, I met somebody who was a massage therapist, and I didn't even realize that could be a job. Like, I thought that only very wealthy people got massages when they were on vacation. So I didn't even know that could be a profession. And he was a massage therapist in West Virginia, and I met him in Key West. He was vacationing with his wife. And he gave me my first one-hour massage, and I was like, wow, this is really, you know, I just felt really good. And so I asked, you know, he told me about the training and the education. And so then actually when I was traveling, I wanted to get a sailboat so I could travel further. But I knew I couldn't get a sailboat crocheting hats and bags, and I didn't want to go back into society unless I was going to do something that I felt like I enjoyed and would contribute. So that's why I actually chose massage, because I've always been good with my hands. You know, the healing aspect, I was intrigued by that. And then I started doing massage with the intention of saving up money and buying a sailboat, but I actually started really enjoying the massage. So I never, and I don't, it doesn't bother me, I never got the sailboat. I'm really happy with where I am now, but that's how that started.
All right. Well, that's sort of a roundabout way to find your destiny. I like it though. I like it. That's really cool. So I came to you, and, you know, at a crucial time as a customer, because as you know, I had begun to develop carpal tunnel syndrome. Mm-hmm. And I tell people all of the time when I hear about folks who have carpal tunnel that surgery does not have to be an option if you can, I guess, get to it in time and use the right massage therapy techniques. And I was blessed in that not only did I reach you with my problem in time, but you actually showed me how to massage myself so that I could also, you know, apply the therapeutic principles on my own when I wasn't seeing you, because I think I would only see you probably once every couple of weeks or something like that. And it literally, you know, helped me to manage and I think essentially eliminate my carpal tunnel. Do you remember what you told me about carpal tunnel and how you explained it to me? Or maybe you can just give an explanation now as to what carpal tunnel is and why massage was a good therapeutic response to that.
Well, carpal tunnel is really just the symptom. A carpal tunnel is a little hole in the, it's a hole formed by bones in the wrist, and tendons and nerves go through that to serve the hand. And what can happen is if the forearms and arms, due to inflammation or overuse or whatever, can cause swelling in that tunnel, which contributes to the impingement on the nerves that run through there. Now, there are people who are born naturally, it's mostly women who are born with a smaller carpal tunnel, and sometimes surgery is helpful in those cases because there's nothing's going to, they were just born with a small, we're all born differently anatomically. But in many cases, it's just a matter of reducing that swelling and symptoms. And sometimes carpal tunnel is misdiagnosed. People think they have carpal tunnel when really it's just something else is unhappy in the forearm, and it produces similar symptoms.
Mm. Well, I know I'm assuming that my doctor's diagnosis was correct. I know that it was bad enough that I was wearing a hand brace on one hand, and my doctor had me also ingesting some capsules, some pills or tablets for I guess it was for pain and maybe to deal with some of the symptoms. And he actually told me that if these things didn't work, the tablets and the hand brace, that the next step for me was going to have to be surgery. And I was working as I said, as a newspaper journalist. So at that time, so I was typing all the time. I mean, my day was, you know, 70 to 80% of my day was probably typing. So it was
carpal tunnel symptoms.
Say it again. So I what?
No wonder that you ended up with carpal tunnel.
Yeah.
Symptoms with all that, you know, all the typing, and often the neck brace, the wrist brace is prescribed because typically, what can happen is some people sleep at night with their arms, their hands folded underneath them,
mm-hmm.
and that will contribute to the for developing of those kinds of symptoms. And so the wrist brace is really just to prevent you from doing that at night. So when people say the wrist brace helped, that would probably be why. But that's all the wrist brace does. It doesn't really do anything. It just prevents you if you're one of those sleepers that likes to tuck your hands under.
Right. And I think I am one of those kinds of sleepers. But anyway, the technique that you showed me and that you applied to me and then showed me so that I could do it on my own, it saved me not only from surgery, but I obviously was able to stop wearing the wrist brace, and I stopped taking the oral medication. And when I told my doctor, what I had done, what we had done, and how it had worked, you know, I have to give him a lot of credit. In fact, he and I are still friends today, Dr. Ron Wyatt, who's actually been a guest on this show talking about other issues. Ron said, hey, keep doing what you're doing. You know, he didn't have, we sometimes hear that medical doctors reject non-medical solutions to our health problems, but Ron was very open to what I was doing and supportive. Did that surprise you?
You know, not really, because at the time it didn't, because in Huntsville, I actually was getting a lot of referrals from physicians who, if their patient was overstressed or there were certain things going on that they felt like a massage therapist could help. So I was kind of spoiled in my early years in Huntsville because most of the medical professionals I had dealings with thought massage was a great idea for many of their patients. And then it wasn't until I was in the field longer that I saw more and more that, you know, it's kind of up in, you know, some do, some don't, and there's just a disconnect about how pain is taught in the medical school and the research that's come out in the last 20 years about what pain is. And I saw President Bill Clinton had a symposium, and he had a physician on there, and she said, in medical school, we just learned if they're in pain, give them pain meds.
Yeah.
That's all they learned.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm rambling.
No. That's actually a good that's actually a good way to segue into the larger discussion of pain management, because that is exactly what you've done. You have evolved from simply doing massage therapy. In fact, do you even do massage therapy anymore?
No, actually, I closed my office in November 2015.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you've been working full time as the founder of the Pain Management Summit, the San Diego Pain Management Summit. Did I get the name right?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
San Diego Pain Summit. Yeah, mm-hmm. I closed my office so I could spend more time doing this, and then also, the digital marketing thing, which is a hobby that I really enjoy, search engine optimization and marketing and all that. And that's, you know, something else. But, and I didn't plan on doing massage indefinitely. What I wanted to do was do massage for a while and then maybe teach or have something to do with education. And so I, before I closed my practice, I started hosting continuing education courses that were open to physical therapists and massage therapists, chiropractic, you know, open to multidisciplinary. And it was in one of those workshops that I overheard the instructor talking to the students, and a couple of them had recently graduated PT school, and he said, are you learning anything about pain research? Some of the greats like Patrick Wall, and who's not alive now, but Lorimer Mosley, who is, and David Butler, who is. And the student said, well, yeah, we're learning some of that, but we don't know how to use it. And this huge light bulb just went, I mean, when you talk about a light bulb going off in your head, I've never had this, the feeling. And I was like, okay, I've got to, you know, organizing a conference, it can't be much harder than organizing a workshop, and I know exactly who I'm going to have on stage. Because I had been following clinicians for several years who wrote about how they were translating pain research into their practice. And so, you know, so that's how all that got started. But I'm really passionate about helping show, and part of that is teaching your patients self-efficacy, you know, teaching your patients how to manage their own health care and pain, which a lot of clinicians don't do. You know, you're like, oh, you need to come in every week for 30 weeks, or, and then if that doesn't help, there's nothing I can do for you, so bye.
What is, so what is the most important thing you think people need to know about pain?
Well, for one thing, we all have it, and I think there's this idea that pain is abnormal, and that if you have it, then something must be wrong with you. But that's not always the case. I think it's just part of being human that we have pain. And definitely, you know, people have pain that prevents them from living, their life. But what we tend to treat pain is that it's this outside thing that we have to defeat. And research is showing that if you learn to that you're not going to ever go back to that time in your life when you didn't have pain, and you learn to live with your pain and try and have it as part of your life, people actually reported feeling a less perception of pain than the ones who were always like, I've got to fight my pain, I've got to get rid of it, you know, that sort of thing. So, and I think it's important for people to understand that there are clinicians who are taking this research and they're using it in their practice, but they don't know that. They don't know that they can look for clinicians who are doing that. And if, you know, the listeners want to go to sandiegopainsummit.com and click on Living with Pain, there's a free video that they can watch where they can listen to the experiences that other patients had and how they found, you know, a clinician who understood pain research and could work with them. And I don't think a lot of patients realize that that option is out there. And Stanford also, if you go to YouTube and you search Stanford Back Pain Conference, they had a 6-hour long conference teaching pain to the public and how to manage pain, and so it's free on YouTube.
But just to be clear, Rajam, your premise is that pain is not something that has to be eradicated. Pain is, in fact, something that we can learn to live with and even perhaps benefit from. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't think pain, I would like to see pain eradicated, but I think just by the nature of being human, I don't think that's possible.
So instead of, okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, and I was just going to say, and when I say live with pain, I'm not trying to erase or negate the experience that people have where pain is debilitating and they can't feed themselves, they can't even get up out of bed. I'm not trying to negate that or try and tell, you know, you have to be careful how you word it because it can come out sounding like, oh, just live with your pain, it's all in your head, you'll be fine. And that's not at all what I'm trying to say.
But you are suggesting that the traditional reactions that we have to pain may not be what, realistic, or may not be productive?
Not be helpful.
Okay.
Yeah, so
okay.
You know, so it's easy to say, oh, we have to, throw medicine at it or whatever, which medicine can be helpful, but I think we just have to change. Yeah, it's just not productive, I don't think, to make people feel like they can't do anything because they have pain.
So we can try to eradicate pain, but if we can't eradicate it, then the next step that if I'm understanding you correctly, the next step then is to think about how do we live with pain and how do we manage the process so that we can most effectively live with whatever pain we have. Is that right? Is that a good summary?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
It's complicated.
Yeah, and I mean, I can tell it is. I can tell it is because it's something that we're not really... I mean, we're not conditioned to think about pain as something that we should, you know, that, you know, we, like you said earlier, we just, you know, we're conditioned to think, you know, if you have pain, the objective is to eradicate it, find the source of the pain and eradicate it. And then if that can't happen, then the next step for many of us is, well, let's get pain relievers. Let's take pills or some other medicine. And I guess what I would infer from what you're saying is that that's one of the problems you see, is an over-reliance on pain medications that may actually have side effects. Is that right?
Well, and I think that's a kind of dangerous water to tread, too, because I know that pain medications can help people, you know, live better lives. But it's dangerous when we get into the notion that it's only the medication that's going to help us live better lives, when often it's other things. It has to do with, you know, do you have family support? Do you have friends? Are you eating well? Are you sleeping well? Like, all these things have to do with how much we perceive our pain than just that there's pain. Because pain is there to tell us something's wrong, but a lot of times there's nothing wrong. It's just somehow our nervous system is on this feedback loop. And so I think it's important for clinicians to consider the patient's social, that's what biopsychosocial means. You're considering the patient's social life, you know, what they're doing all day, rather than just, oh, you have pain, let's throw medicine at it.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many other factors that could be contributing to that perception of pain than just they perceive pain.
So if you...
That makes any sense.
Okay. Well, I mean, we're working through it. I mean, it makes sense, but we're sort of working through it because I think this is a new concept for me. I know it's a new concept for me, and I'm assuming it's a new concept for people who are listening to the podcast. So when someone comes to you and says, you know, Rajam, I'm in pain, and I, you know, and it's having a negative and an adverse impact on my life, and I don't know what to do. What do you say? What's your process? How do you approach that person?
Well, as a massage therapist, I was pretty limited because I have to stay within scope of practice. So I would interview them further to find out maybe a little bit more about their history that led up to that point, what aggravates it, what makes it feel better. And then if I was concerned, I would refer them out to get a medical checkup. So if the way they describe their experience made me think, oh, there may be something really medically going on here that they need to get checked out. And sometimes I just did that anyway just to make sure. And then so that I would just work with them and talk more about, try and talk to them about, like, what did they enjoy doing, try and include more of those things into their life. And not doing the things that aggravated that pain. You know, if sleeping on that side hurts, don't sleep on that side. Sleep on the other side. You know, stuff like that. But it's a lot more limited coming from my profession as a massage therapist than if I'm, you know, physician or somebody, or even a massage therapist who's working in a multidisciplinary clinic. That's even, then you can refer, or, you know, some people to a psychologist or, you know, that sort of thing.
So let me ask the question a little differently. As the founder of the San Diego Pain Summit, what is it that you want, people to come away with? What do you want them to learn? What do you want them to know as attendees that can help them better manage or even eradicate physical pain in their lives?
That's a very big question. Well, for the general public, I would like people to know that there is mounting evidence that's showing that pain doesn't equate tissue damage. There's a really popular story about from this pain researcher where he got bit by a snake in Australia. He got bit by a brown snake when he was at a friend's house, and I guess that's the most poisonous snake in Australia. And so he woke up in the hospital, and his leg was swollen, and fortunately they got him there in time, and he didn't die. So then a few months later, he was walking in a park with a friend, and he felt something bite his foot, and he jumped up. He's like, ow, ow, it hurts so bad. And his leg started hurting again, and he looked down, and it was a twig. But his mind remembered, you know, last time you felt something, you know, brush your foot, you almost died. And so when he felt that again, and that's kind of like how pain works. It's also based in what we perceive as a threat. And the problem with trying to, it's a difficult thing to explain to, it's a difficult concept, I think, because you have to shift your viewpoint on the idea that, you know, there's that famous drawing where the man is touching the fire. The fire activates pain receptors that travel up the brain and then goes to the brain and says, okay, there's pain, and that's not how pain works. There are no pain receptors in the body. You know, there's a reaction that happens, and then the brain decides, okay, is that a threat? Is it not a threat? What's happened there before? What's not happened? But then that can be perceived as saying that it's in your head when it's not.
Okay.
So you just have, it's what's difficult about it is that the language used to explain what we know about pain, you just have to really tread carefully because it's so easy to misinterpret what is being said. Especially if you're talking to somebody who lives with debilitating chronic pain. And right now we have the opioid crisis, and there's a lot of fear and anger and hate in that, around that. And so that's why we just have to be careful. And that's what we're trying at the summit. A lot of the clinicians, that's what we're dealing with. We're trying to, how can we communicate pain research with our patients and give them self-efficacy, but in a way that doesn't make them think that we're saying it's all in your head or, we don't believe you, your pain isn't real. So to really, it's pretty tough.
Are you targeting patients or clinicians with the Pain Summit?
The Pain Summit is targeted towards clinicians, and I get about 100 to 150 people who come from all over the world. I've had people come from India and Korea, South Korea, Brazil, Australia, New Zealand, and they come to learn. And I do a mix of, I usually bring in some researchers who talk about the current research they're using with pain, and then I bring in clinicians who are using that research so they can talk about how they're doing it. So it's not really like this is how you manage pain, but these are ideas to help give you a framework because there is no one way. But you can develop a framework based on what the research is telling us right now.
Hmm.
And sometimes patients come. I've had a couple. They're more than welcome to attend. I have patients occasionally that come just because they're interested in pain and they enjoy learning about the research behind it.
Fascinating. Well, I have to say, I think if you are helping to refine the dialogue among clinicians and patients about pain and how we should relate to pain, I think that's a good thing.
And there's some, oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
There's some preliminary evidence showing that when people understand what pain is, then that actually helps decrease their perception of pain. It helps remove a lot of the fear, and fear also increases your perception of pain. So when you can reduce that fear, actually it helps people feel better.
Awesome. All right. So one more time, let's get the website for the Pain Summit.
It's SanDiegoPainSummit.com.
All right, and you don't have to be in San Diego, obviously, to access the website and to get some of the information that is available there. But if you happen to be in San Diego when the Pain Summit is occurring and you're a clinician or a patient, I'm sure Rajam would love to have you there. When is the next Pain Summit going to be held?
The next one is February, so it's a week-long pre-conference workshops, and workshops are starting February 22nd or 21st through February 24th. And the keynote for 2019, which I'm really excited about, is Dr. Antonio Damasio, and he's one of the top neuroscientists in the world.
Wow.
And his research is based around how our emotions create our perception of reality. And so it's some pretty heavy stuff that I don't really understand a lot of it. But it's going to be a huge honor to have him as a keynote. So I'm really excited about that.
Awesome. Rajam Roos, my good friend and former massage therapist, who is the founder of the San Diego Pain Summit, helping to change the dialogue about pain and pain management in the medical community around the world and also among patients. Rajam, thank you for joining me for the Healthy Alabama podcast. It's been great just connecting with you again, and I wish you well as you continue to affect how we perceive and address pain.
Thank you for having me, David. I really appreciate it.
The Healthy Alabama podcast is sponsored by Enroll Alabama and produced in partnership with Oakwood University Radio, Praise 90.1 FM, WJOU. Our theme music was produced by DJ Bailey, my man. I'm David Person. Until next time, be healthy.